You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon and Breaking Football, and you can also follow me on Twitter at Michael J. Kist. As always, I am joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7-Year Streak Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. Follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, we got a win, brother. How you doing?
A win does not even begin to describe what happened to the Chicago Bears on Sunday. That was something. Let me tell you, I did my film breakdown of the week on Mitchell Trubisky and the way that he's been playing. And in his past few games as the Bears quarterback, that rookie starter has been playing better. Their offense has been playing well. And I predicted a big Eagle victory. I predicted a multi-score Eagle victory. I had it 38-17 because I felt it. You know, I felt it in my gut. But there was good reason to think that this was going to be a close game. The Bears have played a lot of close games against a lot of good teams.
Right.
If there were a need to repeat the performance of the first half and the second, which there wasn't, that Eagle team clearly came out just kind of chilling in the second half, that game would have been 50-0. It was unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, talk about, oh, it's a trap game. Doug Peterson, that team was ready to go. You can tell they're excited to go on this West Coast trip. I think this is going to be a lot of fun. But man, 10-1, first time that's happened since the 2004 Super Bowl season. This is some good stuff here, Mike. Some good stuff.
Yeah, I talked about it on Friday, the prospects of it being a trap game. I didn't think it was going to be, and it wasn't. Look, before we get into all the details of the games, I have a quick correction. I'm self-reporting here. On the Friday preview show, I said that Baylor wide receiver Katie Cannon toasted Chicago cornerback Bryce Callahan for 9 receptions, 2 bills, and 2 tutties. That was incorrect. It was actually Rice cornerback J.D. Blasengame. The big difference. We're all about accountability here on Locked On Eagles, so I apologize for the bad info. And that's why we need Gentle Ben here, and he is no longer allowed to take days off. So... You got one over on me, Ben. That's on me. The second thing I want to talk about real quick before we get into the game, Aqib Talib.
The chain snatcher! Oh, I idolize Aqib Talib. Okay, and listen, let's make one thing very clear. If you had the take that, okay, Aqib Talib snatched Michael Crabtree's chain for the second time, but he was getting pushed around and he was getting beaten up, so it doesn't really matter, that is false, okay? It's one thing, especially a football fight, quote unquote fight, because football doesn't really have fights. You know, Michael Crabtree decided he was going to shove Aqib Talib. When you're Aqib Talib, you just think you're gonna get blocked by a wide receiver, and then Crabtree starts shoving you. There's nothing you can do about that, right? You're gonna have to take that immediate L. And then after they got back up, it was pretty even fight. So yeah, Talib was getting shoved around. That's what happens on football plays. He didn't know it was gonna escalate to that. Once he did, he took Michael Crabtree's chain. Again, I can't stress to you how important the again is in that phrase. Again, Michael Crabtree had his chain snatched by Aqib Talib, was injured for one of his next games against Aqib Talib, then came back and decided to still wear a chain, and Aqib Talib took it. That's unbelievable. I'm losing my mind. It was amazing.
Aqib Talib is officially the league leader in chain snatching all time. 100% conversion rate on that.
Oh my gosh.
Amazing. All right, so
thrilling.
Let's get into the Eagles-Bears beatdown here. All right, some fun facts for you. The Eagles held the Bears to 0 first downs and 33 yards in the first half. The Bears would end up with 140 total yards. The Eagles' defense remains the only team that has yet to surrender a first quarter touchdown this year. Zach Ertz gets his 7th red zone touchdown on the year and turns in the first 100-yard receiving game for an Eagle player this year. Wentz has 7 consecutive games with multiple touchdowns. It's the Eagles' 4th consecutive win by 23 or better, and their 3rd consecutive win by exactly 28 points. This is the 10th consecutive game that the Eagles have rushed for 100 yards plus. They had 176 today. Last one here. The Bears ran 14 times for 6 yards. 6 yards for a .4 average. At that rate, it would have taken them 250 rushing attempts to have a 100-yard day. This game puts us at 2.9 yards per carry allowed against enemy running backs, which is some world-class stuff. Ben, do any of those stats stand out for you? What do you want to talk about here?
Well, it's going to stand out the most for me, actually. I'll go this direction with it. And hail to Brandon Lee Gowton of Bleeding Green Nation, friend of the podcast, who initially dropped this info for me. The Eagles have had a 175-plus yards rushing in 3 consecutive games, right? Which is the first time that that's happened since 1990. All right. And wow. here's why that's very, very exciting for me for two big reasons. One is that to which we've already alluded very often, which is that this running game is a lot better than we thought it was. This offensive line is absurdly good and unbelievably good compared to what we kind of expected from them coming in. And now obviously the additions of Jay Ajayi, the emergence of Corey Clement, who looks better and better every week, man. Corey Clement, very excited about what he's doing here for Philadelphia. That we've talked about that. It's awesome how well this Eagles rushing attack is doing. But the second aspect of that is this. The Eagles can control game script and can control football games. I don't know if you were watching that New Orleans-Los Angeles sort of that game there at the end, where for almost the entire end of the game, Sean McVay and the Rams had a two-possession lead in the fourth quarter, and they were running regular offense, right? The Rams currently lead the league in positive game script passing plays, which is to say that when they're leading, they're still throwing the football. By far, they lead the league on these plays, right? And I respect that aggressiveness. Tony Romo was the broadcaster, was a big fan of it. Sean McVay, young coach, uber aggressive, I get that. But they left 2 minutes and 30 seconds on the clock, 13-point game. The Saints marched it down the field very easily, scored. It was a 6-point game. If they have the onside kick, it's 40 yards with a minute left for the Saints to go ahead and score, right? You need to be able to control game flow. You need to be able to control game script. There's no reason for that silliness. I think the Eagles are at a point right now where they can really control the flow of games in any direction. The best thing about this team is its well-roundedness. You get the sense that if they like for example, LeGarrette Blount getting all these first half carries against the Bears, why? We haven't seen that in weeks, especially not since the Ajayi trade. Well, clearly the coaching staff liked that matchup, so they went for it. They used it, and it worked perfectly, right? This team can do so many different things. They can control game flow, control the clock, control game script, everything, right? They have the ability to attack you in so many different ways that they really can dictate the narrative of the game, and that's huge. It's going to be huge in winter. It's going to be huge deep into the playoffs. It's huge.
I was just about to hit on that. That matters when you get into the playoffs. Not letting these high-scoring teams like the Saints, like the Rams, get back into games because you can't control the clock, control the game script. Like you said, it matters a lot. So having that running game is gigantic. It doesn't have to be all on Wentz. That's totally fine. And Wentz played fantastic. I'm not saying that he didn't. 4 touchdowns, 227 yards. He got the job done. But we'll get into some of the other stuff right here. It got sloppy at time for the Eagles. Malcolm Jenkins had a fumble on his interception return. LeGarrette Blount fumbled once. Nick Foles had a fumbled exchange with Blount as well that they lost. Jay Ajayi got bailed out on a fumble into the end zone that Nelson Aguilar would recover for a touchdown. They got lucky there. The Eagles were penalized 11 times for 70 yards. You would like to see a more well-rounded game of mistake-free football, but things happen. We don't make excuses for penalties like the Dallas Cowboys media. We expect better. We have gotten better from our team in those situations. They've rebounded well. The defense stepped up when they were put into some minus situations. Any other areas where the Eagles slipped up a bit, Ben, or does that pretty much cover it?
Yeah, I mean, the false starts kind of stand out a little bit, especially for at home. There was a large amount of false starts and offsides penalties that were definitely, you know, you don't want to see that for sure. If that's persistent a problem, then we'll talk about it. Obviously, Seattle coming up on Sunday, that's an area where you get a lot more of those on the road. It's a very loud stadium. So maybe that becomes a conversation then. As far as right now, there's no reason to get crazy about it. And then, yeah, Ajayi, you know, got a little bit loose with it. Of course, when you're that deep into the secondary, you don't really think there's going to be a guy closing on you from the backside, right? That was great hustle. That was Craven LeBlanc. Yeah, that was great hustle. He's coming from the opposite side of the field. That was a great quality play, especially being down that many points. And you could tell that really frustrated Ajayi. You know, he didn't have he didn't have the most touches. They didn't have the biggest game. The Jenkins one, you're an idiot. Go down. You're a defender. You can't run the football. Stop it.
Don't ever call Malcolm Jenkins an idiot.
I know
on this show,
he's
man.
Not. He's not. That was a rookie mistake for a veteran player, right? You make the pick. You go to advance the football. Once you realize you can't score a touchdown, you just go down, right? It's either pick six or just take a knee, right? Yeah, and then the Foles one obviously was whatever. So, you know, I wasn't surprised the Eagles came out pretty sloppy in the second half. I mean, when you're up 24-0 on a 3-7 team, and they haven't picked up a first down yet, you're bound to kind of take the foot off the gas there a little bit. And at no point in the second half was I like, oh, Chicago's getting close to getting back into this. You know? So no, I was perfectly fine. I personally thought that the Eagles came out and executed very, very, very well overall, especially on the defensive side of the football there in the first half. I don't know about you, but Carson Wentz, you know, played a fine game. He had a couple misses and everything like that, but I found the play of the front seven, especially the linebacking core that began with Joe Walker and then lost Joe Walker, to be particularly impressive. I thought Michael Kendricks played out of his gosh darn mind. I thought that was his best game as an Eagle, and you won't really notice it on the stat sheet, but that was one of his best games this season for sure. And then I thought I was particularly impressed by Brandon Graham, Vinny Curry. I thought that front four had a great game. I want to ask you, though, actually, that reminds me of a good question. Who's the second best defensive end on the Philadelphia Eagles?
Wow. I mean, if you go by pass rush productivity, you could probably go with Derek Barnett or Chris Long if you're adding in the run stuffing element. Vinny Curry is kind of one-dimensional when it comes like that, but he's playing really well. Consistently, man, I mean, oh, wow, dude, that's a tough question. Because yeah. You could argue that Derek Barnett, Chris Long, and Vinny Curry, when they're on the field, play equally as well, and that's what makes this rotation so fantastic. You can have Graham and Curry on the field at the same time and keep those guys fresh, and then you can bring in Chris Long, you can bring in Barnett. I think Barnett's been the more productive pass rusher of those three, so I would probably give it to Barnett. But yeah, man, that is a really tough question, right? What do you have it?
No, that's the exact correct take. It's that then the correct take is this: it's close, right? Because so I tweeted out the poll because I wanted to see what the populace thought, and the question came to my mind during the game, and I said, all right, Ben, don't tweet it out during the game because recency bias. But then Vinny Curry made that like 12-yard tackle on the reverse where he played it perfectly. I was like, all right, I'm tweeting it, let's do it. And as of right now, with 18 hours left, I've got Derek Barnett at 51%, Vinny Curry at 41%, Chris Long at 8%, right? Which I think is inherently wrong in its skewedness. I think that Chris Long has played incredibly good football for Philadelphia. I think that his veteran presence is super valuable there on that defensive line in the second rotation. He always seems to have an impactful sort of a pressure or a hurry or a quarterback hit at least once every single game, you know? And so I think that the correct take is that it's very, very close. You know, obviously, Derek Barnett is likely to be the best of the three within, you know, 1 to 2 years, you know, moving forward. That's what's anticipated. But as far as right now, I don't think you're wrong with any three of those guys playing out there. And then Brandon Graham is, as always, playing out of his mind. 7 sacks in the year. He's broken his rookie record set there. And then Alshon, with the touchdown catch, picked up a cool 250K, man. He hit one of his bonuses on his contract.
Very nice. Very nice. Speaking of which, we are going to start a new tradition, Ben.
Oh, I like tradition.
Every game, we are going to hand out a game ball. I am in the mood to hand out a game ball. What about you? You feeling that?
How very coachy of us. Emotional intelligence. Yeah. Doug Peterson.
we're building the culture here that Chip Kelly envisioned. We're finally getting to it. All right. So, game ball. I'm going to give you the first crack at it. Who is your game ball guy?
That's so kind of you. I do appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, Brandon Graham is an instinct for me. I thought he had a great game. Like I said, Michael Kendricks as well. But to me, it's got to go to Zach Ertz. Like you said, first 100-yard receiving game there on the year. I kind of anticipated this coming down the mountain a little bit. I wrote about it in my prediction for Bleeding Green Nation. I gave him 11 catches for 120 yards and a touchdown. He had 10 for 103 as well as a touchdown. 12 targets for Ertz. You know, 10, he's tied there now for the league. He's tied in the league among tight ends for receiving touchdowns with Jimmy Graham. He's unbelievably talented. You know, really, and we're finally seeing the realization of that, especially without Trey Burton on the field. You wondered if Brent Celek was going to see more snaps, but really they seemed from the eye test very comfortable leaving Zach Ertz out there. They clearly have figured out how to best deploy Ertz as a blocker. They like to use him on those wham concepts where he can kind of just screen a guy off to the side, and he does well there. And then the size to quickness and speed, height, length, that kind of physical profile for Ertz is just, it's very rare. And as he's got the best rapport of all the pass catchers with Carson Wentz. He's Carson's first look in the red zone almost always. I mean, what a guy. What a tool they have there in Zach Ertz. And yeah, against the Bears team that was missing their starting linebacker in Danny Trevathan, you kind of thought Ertz might have a chance to go off, and he did.
Speaking of that wham, man, we whammed Akeem Hicks on a 22-yard gain. I thought it was one of the sexier play calls of the game.
They spent the first 4 plays running actually to Akeem Hicks, and I was like, how drunk are you? And then they came out
and
on the next
fourth and one, right?
They came out on the next possession. They were like, you know what we're going to do? Not run near Akeem Hicks. And they just flew down the field. And there you go. Pretty easy.
Exactly. All right, so my game ball, I mean, this is a very coach thing to do because of the situation. Mine is actually going to go to Alshon Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. It's only right with it being his revenge game and all. I feel that's the way that this should be treated. 5 catches, 52 yards, and a touchdown, which gives him 5 touchdowns in the last 4 games. The way he has performed lately is what we need from him. This offense has shown that it doesn't need a single game-breaking threat to put points on the board. We spread the ball around all over the place. What we need from Alshon is to be a red zone threat to make big boy catches. And that's what we were begging for earlier in the season when it wasn't happening and the chemistry was a bit off and he wasn't really playing strong at the catch point. And that's what we're getting from him now. We can talk about what kind of monetary value we place on that in the offseason, but right now, he's getting it done. He's proven to be a valuable piece of this offense. And I'm glad to have him. I understand we're not going to get 8 catches, 100 yards, wide receiver one type production. We don't need it. I thought this was an excellent game for Jeffrey. I think he's really come along in the last few weeks for this offense. So game ball, Alshon Jeffrey. I'm sure he's going to keep that up in his trophy case. Ben, anything else about this game that you want to talk about before we move on to what else happened real quickly in the NFL in terms of the top seeds?
Can we talk about a plus 160 point differential for the Philadelphia Eagles? Can we talk about 3 straight games of 28 point wins, as well as the game behind that being a 23 point win? Can we talk about 51 possessions? The past 51 possessions for teams facing the Eagles have amounted to 2 touchdowns. You want to talk about these things?
I mean, I kind of touched on the front with the streak there, and then also the first quarter play of the defense not giving up touchdowns and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely this team is operating at such a high level. And people could say, oh, okay, over the last 3 games they played, they got wins over teams that were a combined 11-21. Well, actually make that 11-18 because 3 of those losses were dealt out by the Eagles. Uh-huh. And I talked about this with the trap game situation. Well, look what happened to the Jaguars today. They lose to the Cardinals. The Jaguars were 7-3. Right? Good football teams, playoff ready football teams, do not have letdowns. The Eagles are not having letdowns. They are beating the dog crap out of teams that they are clearly better than. You know what I mean? And they're not letting it get to their head. They're getting the job done. I think that's what impresses me the most about this team is the fact that it's never fully in the bag for them. They want more. They always want more. And I think that's kind of indicative to what happened with Malcolm Jenkins. You think about when Jalen Mills had that interception return for a touchdown and he said he had that voice in the back of his head about how the guys were giving him crap about how he can't get return yards or anything like that on interceptions. And I'm thinking maybe Malcolm Jenkins was one of those guys that was giving Jalen Mills crap. So when he got that interception, he wanted to do a little bit more. Granted, in that situation, not the greatest call, but at the same time, this team is a team that seems to, everyone wants to make a play.
Yeah.
And the whole team is excited for him. There were questions whether or not that LeGarrette Blount would be excited about Jay Ajayi coming in the building because it was going to take touches away from him. Corey Clement got a touchdown and Blount was saying, give Clement the ball. It's his birthday. Like, this team just seems to rally around each other. They celebrate with each other. That feel that this team has, that's the thing for me, man. I haven't seen any other team act the way that the Eagles do, even when, you know, the production isn't there for all these single players, but the snaps around, the ball around, we do it all, and this team just loves it, man. That's what's awesome about it for me.
Can I ask you this? Do you, you know, we talked and we said, all right, of this 2-game West Coast trip at Seattle, at Los Angeles, we said, okay, we kind of anticipate the Eagles will drop one. These are clearly, markedly, the 2 biggest tests remaining on Philadelphia's schedule. Probably just the 2 tests that are left. You know, you have to envision that Oakland, Dallas, the Giants, you're not too concerned about these games. We said 1-1 in that stretch. Do you still feel like 1-1 in that stretch?
I don't think we lose a game until 2031.
All right. Measured take. I agree with that. No, I am.
No, seriously, though, it is a big test going out to Los Angeles. And if this team gets to a point where they lose one of those games, maybe against Seattle on the road, there's a 3-game road stretch coming up. 2 of them are West Coast. You could understand them dropping one. It wouldn't be the panic button time for me. So I'm starting to believe that they win those games. The Rams are still really a really tough team. Really good on special teams. They've got a really good offense. That defense is underrated. So I still have to look into their tape and kind of see what they're good at and dig into all that stuff. I've called it a loss before. I don't necessarily know if that's going to be the case yet. I'm not going to make a prediction yet, but it's still on the table for me. I'll put it like that.
Right. I'll put it to you this way. I still could very easily see them going 1-1. I think that if they end the season 14-2 or 13-3, I still think they're the first seed of the NFC. But all of that being said, I think this team will be disappointed if they don't go 2-0. This team expects to go, like, not expects, like, oh, we should win these games, you know, confidence, everything. I think this team thinks that, like, to go one-on-one would be, like, playing below their caliber, you know what I mean? I think they very much expect to go 2-0 that stretch. I think they want to make that message. It seems that way to me.
Do you think that ends up being a rallying, like, a rallying point to them, like a come-to-Jesus moment kind of thing to them if they do drop one of those games? That's why I'm saying I don't think it's going to be the end of the world for them. I think they use it.
Right. I'll say this. You know, we talk a lot for playoff teams that are approaching the playoffs, that they kind of have to lose. They have to drop a game, you know, to stay sharp and to get hungry. For me, it's more important that they play a four-quarter game, right? The thing that the Eagles haven't done in the past literally 4 weeks is play a four-quarter game. They have had one game that was significant, like against a tough opponent that was into the fourth quarter that they won, which was against the Panthers. And then you had the Chiefs game, which kind of became that way, but it was more like a Hail Mary onside kick sort of a situation. And obviously, that Chiefs game is a bit aberrative now because the Chiefs have dropped 5 of their past 6. They're not playing very well. But I would like to see them have to play the Rams for 4 quarters. I would like to see the Seahawks test them for 4 quarters. You know, I think that would be good to keep this team on edge. To remind them of the mortality. But I've always disputed the idea that you need to lose that game that tests your mortality. You just need to feel your life on the edge. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that take. Okay, so speaking of the other teams in the NFC, real quick, with a win next week against the Seahawks and a Cowboys loss, the Eagles will officially clinch the NFC East. That's a foregone conclusion for me at this point. Instead of focusing on that, we can feel good about that. Instead of focusing on that, though, let's look at the bigger picture and get caught up with the other game from the teams up top at the NFC. So what about the Rams beating up on the Saints? The Saints were missing their top two corners. Predictably, Cooper Kupp, Sammy Watkins have big days with Robert Woods out. Josh Reynolds got involved with a touchdown catch. How do you feel about this Saints team moving forward? And also, congratulations to the Rams for helping us out and leaving us with only one team behind us with one more loss than us. I felt pretty good about today, Ben.
Yeah, no, that was a W. We're getting some breathing room. Obviously, Minnesota's still hanging out there as a 2-loss team. We'll see how Minnesota's able to hang out. Again, I've said it on the pod. I've written about it. I'm worried the most about the Vikings, if not the Vikings and the Rams. I've never once said I'm worried about the Saints, and I think the game against the Rams proved it in the sense that I don't agree that Drew Brees is cooked, but I don't agree that Drew Brees is Drew Brees. You know, Drew Brees is definitely on his final legs here, and you can tell that his arm isn't exactly what it once was. He puts a lot into deep throws down the field, and he missed a couple. He missed a couple in a bad way.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, so he's not what he was. So that's number one. Number two, yeah, those injuries, you know, kind of proved that this New Orleans defense, you know, oftentimes defenses that are outplaying their talent level are exposed once they get injured because they don't have depth. Right. And I think you saw that with this New Orleans team. I think that without those corners really playing excellent football and Crawley and Lattimore, the pass rush struggled to get there. You know, you didn't have the time. And then obviously you're facing a good offense.
They lost Okafor as well, which was the defense was always Cameron Jordan and nothing else. And then you have Alex Okafor producing this year for them. He goes down and now the pass rush doesn't look nearly as potent and they become easier to game plan again. So I think that's part of it, too.
Also, you know, Sean Payton continues to be very confusing. Alvin Kamara got a total of 11 touches today. He turned them into like 200 yards and a touchdown. But he's still, you know, he's still kind of used change of pacey, which bothers me. And then on the opposite side of the football, no, the Rams played a very good game. I stand by my point that situationally they stayed very, very aggressive. And I think that can come back to bite them. I you know, if that ends up being the Eagle game, then it does. But that surprised me a little bit. Other than that, they run the ball very well. Gurley is surging back. Goff is not playing at Wentz level yet, but he's playing quite well. He's playing good football. Wentz is still the better of the two. However, when they duel, that'll be the case. And then that defense, they fly around. They got a lot of speed on defense. I think that the Eagles will look to run it quite like they did against the Bears, up the gut, like Garrett Blunt, a lot of physicality there because that defense is a little undersized, but they can move across the field, which is a big advantage against an offense like the Eagles, an offense like the Saints.
All right, Ben, I think we're good here. The Eagles, again, take another 28-point win, going to win the NFC East, heading into the playoffs with a full head of steam. What else do we have for the gentle listeners throughout the week here?
No, absolutely. So Mike and I are on tons of adventures looking for fun Seahawks guests to bring on, so make sure you keep it tuned there. We'll obviously have the crossover pod Locked on Seahawks with Spike and Grant. That'll be on Wednesday, as it usually is. Tuesday is the usual NFL recap. We'll take a large look at the playoff picture, that sort of a thing. You know, talking about game time decisions, pick a prospect, all of our usual stuff. stuff. We're back on the regular schedule as well this week, so it's what you anticipate, Thursday coming into Friday with the preview show, and then it's Sunday night against the Seahawks, right?
That's right, man. And remember to go to LockedOnEagles.com. Our site is getting a makeover now to make it a little more easy to navigate. I'll be working on that all night with the guys over at FanRag Sports. So we'll keep some of that evergreen content more accessible for you guys. So go check out LockedOnEagles.com and keep it locked on here on Locked On Eagles. Fly, Eagles, fly.